And that's where I think a lot of people lose it is, you know, they get too carried away with the latest craze and workouts or the latest, you know, the latest thing they read that so-and-so did that, you know, well, I can do that. Well, you don't know what they did the 6 weeks prior to that or the 6 weeks after that.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you so much for joining me for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast brought to you by runnersconnect.net. So last week we talked to Todd Williams about running safety, and he gave us some fantastic advice on how to make sure you're never in a place of danger while you're training, and of course what to do if you do find yourself in that situation. So today I have a one-of-a-kind interview, one I've been working on for about a year now after many requests, but I finally managed to convince him to come on the show. So who is this mysterious shy man? Well, it's my husband, Steve. Most of you know that Steve is also my coach, as well as being a collegiate coach for Morehead State University in Kentucky. I'm always telling people that Steve has this amazing natural talent for understanding running and knowing what each individual runner needs to be ready when it matters. So today we're going to get a look into that mind of his, and he even explains each distance group and how you can get the most out of your training. He breaks it down into 800 mile, 5K, 10K and marathon training, and he gives examples of workouts that you should do. So I'm always a little bit nervous about these episodes that are focused on my training, but then you guys email me asking for more. So I thought it was time to do another. And Steve has some great advice that everyone can take from this, no matter if you're a high school runner or a master's athlete. Although maybe not our 85-year-old friend, Ed Whitlock. Ed shouldn't be listening to anyone else but himself. He's just out there being a rock star and breaking world records. So make sure you listen to that episode if you missed it. So before I begin, I have a quick announcement. I put so much time, energy, and heart into this podcast, and it's completely free to download and listen to. But it has grown big enough that we can bring on sponsors, and I hope you understand my reasons for doing this. It helps to support me and my training, and I really hope you don't mind. I only choose sponsors who I think will fit with what you want to hear and be beneficial for you. So I want to welcome Endurapex as our new sponsors. Oh, and one more thing. I owe you an apology. A few minutes into this interview, my sister called me on FaceTime. I didn't want to edit out that part of the interview as what Steve was saying is important, but I just wanted to warn you as it gets a little bit loud for a few seconds. But as you can imagine, I jumped right on it and there are no further interruptions from there. So let's meet our new sponsors and then my husband, Steve. Hydrate naturally by adding Endurapex electrolyte spray to any drink. Endurapex has zero calories, no sugar, no sweeteners or artificial ingredients. Yep, you heard that right. Just the electrolytes you need. Visit Endurapex.com and listen out later in the show for a coupon for 10% off. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, my Steve.
Thanks for welcoming to my own house.
Well, I don't know where you want us to do it. We could be going to a coffee shop, but it might be a little bit loud. So hopefully this works. So anyone who has been listening to this for a while, read my blog, probably know who you are. But if you were to describe yourself in maybe 30 seconds, what would you like to say to anyone listening?
I am the head cross-country and track and field coach at Morehead State. Previously to Morehead, I coached for 7 years at Ferris State, which is a school in the northern part of Michigan.
Anything else in your life that's
I am married to Tina. I have coached a few other post-collegiate athletes for short periods of time, but mostly it's just collegiate coaching and I'm helping her.
Yeah, I thought you forgot for a minute there. Maybe I'm not as important as I thought I was. All right, so I want to kind of go over your background a little bit, maybe before we begin, just so people can kind of get a bit of a glimpse into who you are a bit more than that. I know you're quite shy and you're very modest, but you probably won't want to say too much, but maybe if you could just tell us a bit about your history, you know, as a runner yourself, and then maybe as a bit more into coaching.
I ran in high school and college. Never was an amazing runner, but I ran competitively in high school and all through college. After college, I actually have a degree in automotive engineering. I went out and worked in automotive industry for 6 years, and then when the automotive industry kind of hit the hit a downslide that I was going to get laid off. So I actually went back to Ferris State to begin working on a different type of engineering degree and was volunteer coaching there for a year. Some problems, you know, the other coaches were leaving and they really didn't have anybody to take over the program. So I was supposed to do it for kind of like a semester. And then 7 years later, I was still doing it.
You were kind of successful at it, so that may be one way of putting it. But, all right, so anyone who was listening to that probably got stuck on the fact you said you were in automotive engineering and you worked there. So what kind of made you decide to kind of make that switch towards coaching? I mean, I know this, but not anyone listening knows that you took a big pay cut to do that. Being a volunteer coach, you obviously didn't have money coming in, so what made you decide to make that jump, even though it meant it was a bit of a risk?
Well, it's probably easier to explain how most college coaches get started. So most college coaches, how they get started is they get a GA position while they're getting their master's, and they kind of volunteer slash GA for 2 years at a college. And then from there, they kind of roll that into hopefully a full-time assistant, maybe at a different school or at the same school, and kind of slowly work their way up. So I kind of did it a little different way. I was just back strictly volunteering, and I actually had another job in the athletic department. I was the assistant to the athletic directors for like game management. So I spent a lot of time with the athletic director that first year, and you know, he'd always ask me what I wanted to do. And at that point in my career, I didn't know. I'd been working in the automotive industry for 5 or 6 years, and I basically just left because I knew I was going to get laid off and I wasn't happy with the job. So kind of what I did from there was, you know, look at all my options and really see kind of what I could do. And, you know, with what I was doing at the currently was going through, you know, trying to look another engineering job and move on. But I really enjoyed volunteering with the cross country team and helping the cross country and track program. And it was just kind of right place at the right time when, you know, both the other coaches that were there both left, and they'd asked me if I wanted to keep doing it. They had we were hosting an NCAA regional meet that fall. So they were in a tough place, and I just happened to be the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm. And did you know as soon as you kind of started with the volunteering with the team that this was what you wanted to do, or was it something that you didn't really realize until you got that job as the interim coach?
I didn't really realize it until I'd already probably been coaching for an entire year as an interim head coach. Just the first year as volunteering, it was just me trying to, you know, get everything turned around and figure out what was going to do next. And I really didn't know this was really what I wanted to do until I started full-time, you know, interim coaching as the head coach for that year.
Mm-hmm. And anyone listening who, you know, maybe is interested in running and they are, you know, wanting to be a coach, would you say that what you mentioned earlier about, you know, doing the volunteer or being a GA first and then moving on to trying to work your way up, essentially, is that the best way to do it? Or is there another option for people, you know, maybe if they've been working for a while?
I mean, that's probably the most common option. There's a lot of people who maybe even start off as high school coaches. I have a successful high school coaching career and then can kind of roll into college from there. But that's kind of the other option as far as, you know, is that as establish yourself as a high school coach. And then it's really hard to get into college coaching. If I wasn't in the right place at the right time, I probably wouldn't have been offered the full-time position at Ferris State. I mean, I applied to, after that first year as interim, I didn't know they were going to give me the job. So I'd applied to about every opening there was and didn't get a single interview. So it's just very hard to kind of get into that network. And even to this day, it seems very, you know, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's kind of illogical how they do it. You know, it's more about who you know than what you know, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. And so what, for anyone listening who doesn't really know what a collegiate coach involves, do you want to kind of tell us exactly what you do? Because I know how many hours you work, but, you know, most people who don't understand it have absolutely no idea.
Well, unfortunately, most of what I do is not related to actual coaching of athletes. As an NCAA coach or a collegiate coach, you do a lot of budget operations, you know, planning and budget management, you know, overseeing, you know, all the kids as far as academics and making sure they're on the right track there. There's a lot of rules and just red tape you have to go through to get anything done. But, you know, most of my day is spent trying to, you know, organize the travel and the lodging and, you know, the whole schedule and, you know, manage everything from that aspect of it. And then I would say a very small portion of what I do on a daily basis is actual coaching. And then, you know, that doesn't include recruiting, which takes up another large section of time, is trying to really, you know, convince kids that the school you're at is where they need to be. And, you know, for me, it's not about convincing the kid to come to Morehead State. It's or whatever school I've met at Ferris, it's the same thing. You're finding the right fit for them. I mean, you can convince any kid to go anywhere, but is it really going to be right for them in the future? You know, that's where I'm a little different. If the kid's not the right fit, I'm not going to continue to pursue it just because he's run fast.
Mm-hmm. And I think another way that you're different is that you, you know, you really put the time into it. But, you know, can you maybe explain time into it to get to know people? But can you maybe explain, like, you know, to people listening that just how big the recruiting aspect is? Like, you know, there's so many people going after one athlete. It's not like, you know, you come up to them and say, hey, you know, you want to run for me? And they say, yeah, sure, because there's like so many different options. So maybe explain how that part works.
Yeah, the recruiting process is a little different in cross country and track. And obviously your top level kids, you know, the top 20% of kids in the country are, you know, they're looking at a lot, you know, bigger schools, the, you know, Oregon and Stanford and, you know, Mississippi and all those big time, you know, I think Mississippi State had the number one runner in the 800 last year. And those type of kids are getting recruited a little different than the majority of the kids that I'll recruit are being contacted by, you know, 15 to 20 schools. So you're just trying to get in contact with them, get the name with them, show them what's, you know, what your school has to offer. And you know, a lot of people just think it's just, you know, calling up the kid and convince them to come visit and come to the school. But you know, you're trying to get to know the kid as much as you can. And you only have a little bit of contact period with them to try and see if they're the right type of kid and personality, because each program is going to be different. The type of kid I recruit to Ferris State is similar to the type of kid I'd like to get at Moorhead, but it's still different because you're in different parts of the country. And so each school is going to have their niches that they're going to really try and, you know, find. And that's kind of the biggest thing is, you know, just because the kids run fast or you know, guy or girl has run a certain time doesn't mean that'd be the great fit for your program. It's all on, you know, what do they want to study academically? Are they looking for a big school, a small school? Do they want to be in a big city? Do they want to be in a more of a country setting? So it's just all based on what the kids are looking for too. And, you know, 16, 17-year-olds don't always know what they want.
So then related to that, what would your advice based on your experience be to any high school athlete listening to this right now, like who's maybe a little bit overwhelmed with the colleges? How do they choose and know which school would work best for them?
I think the best thing I've seen is actually from a few of the kids I've recruited is they were very organized and they had lists about each school. And, you know, they weren't looking necessarily at, you know, stuff on the surface. They're looking more beneath that to figure out, you know, all right, are the kids in this team getting better as they through their career? You know, spend some time with them. Are they really enjoying what they're doing, or is it just kind of a, you know, punching a time clock like it's a job? You know, so the best advice I would say is just look at as many schools as you can, and you know, don't just rule schools out on the surface because you know there's a lot more to a program than that.
Mm-hmm. And I know I'm very intuitive and kind of go with the gut, and you are to some extent, but maybe a little bit more. You know, mechanical and logical about things. But I've also thought that another big thing is to make sure you go with your heart, like see how you feel when you go to this particular place. And if it feels like it works for you, then, you know, trust your heart and trust your gut. But what would your advice be then to someone who is, you know, a recreational runner or someone, you know, thinking about getting a coach for the first time, they're training for their first marathon? Is there a way to kind of sort through all the running coaches that are out there to find the person that will work best for them?
Well, like I said, with me, I'm mostly just focused on the collegiate end of it. But as far as people who are just trying to get into the sport and get started, you can learn a lot just by reading a few books and really trying to kind of focus more on, you know, the basics. So many people get so wrapped up into all the, you know, fancy workouts and all the training programs and just, you know, my advice would be for the beginning, just keep it simple, read a few books, you know, and then you can kind of slowly figure out what kind of coach is going to work better for you. But it's a lot of it's just going to be on, you know, doing your research and really finding somebody that lets you do type of things that you have availability to do. And, you know, as a college coach, it's the same thing. We can't train the same way as every school because each school is going to have certain things that they can have access to or, you know, you can't always just look at a book and train exactly what the book says because you got to be able to tailor that to what you have available.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is a perfect segue for us to kind of talk about, you know, you and coaching. So firstly, I guess, what is your favorite thing about coaching? Like, what is it that you love the most about coaching runners?
I like seeing, like, as far as, I mean, mostly what I do with the collegiate kids is seeing them progress, and, you know, from the time we start with them to the time they graduate, not just how fast they get from, you know, day one to the day they leave, but, you know, watching them change and mature and get them ready for their next phase of their life. It's, you know, we'd love to, one of my lines I always say that I probably say too much is, I love you all to get a scholar or a sponsorship by Nike or something, or, you know, go out to Oregon and run out there. But the reality of it is you're all going to have to get real jobs at some point. So just seeing them get prepared for the next phase of their life. So it's more than just the running. It's watching them mature and helping them kind of learn, you know, that they can push themselves and that they can, they put their minds to things. And if you work together as a group, you can succeed.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, how important would you say having a coach is to that part of things? Like someone listening who's thinking, oh, I don't really need a coach. Do you think having that outside opinion, that person standing there, makes a big difference to these? You know, if a college kid was just to go out there and run on their own, or even just any other runner, is a coach really important, or can you kind of get away with it?
Yeah, I think whether from a college kid to up to a just a recreational runner or a weekend warrior, you need structure. You need somebody that's going to hold you accountable. You may be the most hard working person on the planet, but you also need that coach to be able to pull you back and tell you when to rest and tell you when to back off. So, you know, it's funny because as a college coach, you have to really watch everything and really try and teach them every little step. But, you know, at the same time, you know, as they get older, you're also learning to, like, where their strengths and weaknesses are. Certain kids, you have to push them. You know, other kids, you got to hold them back. And I think it's the same way for other runners, too, is if they would just, you know, find somebody that, you know, a coach may be the wrong term, an advisor or somebody that can kind of help you plan your training and help you kind of just check in with you and keep things kind of organized for you.
Mm-hmm. So could that even be just like a running friend who's been running for a while, or like some, just anyone with that outside opinion that can kind of, you know, tell you like, hey, you know, you sure you want to do another like hard day today? You only did a hard day yesterday, or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I think the big thing is just got to be somebody that you trust and somebody that you listen to, because if that person tells you that, hey, well, you know, you should go a little shorter today, if the back of your mind you don't really trust them, then you're never going to listen to them anyway. And that, I mean, that doesn't matter if you're reading the advice out of a book or getting it from one of the best coaches in the world. If you don't follow the philosophy, then there's no point in doing it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is the perfect time to kind of ask about us, because whenever I meet anyone and I say that you are my husband and you are also my coach, I always get a bit of a, like a side look from people, like, how does that work? And it always kind of, comes across in a way of like they're surprised that it actually works. So you know, you have been coaching me for I don't know, eight years now, something like that. And so, you know, most people probably couldn't handle that. Most husband and wife pairs couldn't handle that. But why do you think we're able to do it, and why do you think it works?
I mean, it's each situation would be different. So I think, you know, there's no one thing that makes it work for us. And I think the biggest thing is we're able to separate it a little bit. You know, for me, it's, I approach it as almost two different things. So, you know, as a coach, you don't, you know, it's a coach. And then as a husband, it's a husband. You try not to blend the two all the time. There is going to be times where it's going to cross and mix. But the biggest thing is you've got to be able to separate it. And, you know, for me, it's like, we don't need to talk about running 24 hours a day. And I think just works out good, because you're the type of runner that's the same way, that you don't want it on your mind 24 hours a day. Where if it's somebody who just, you know, constantly needs to be thinking about it, it would be a little different, because it's hard. You can't have that break from it.
Mm-hmm. So speaking of that, you know, you said we try and keep it different, separate. And, you know, just because it's kind of a funny story, do you want to maybe give people a bit of insight into some of the like silly things that I do while I'm that do kind of blend that, like, you know, the waking you up just after we've gone to bed, just kind of like some funny things that people might be interested to hear?
I mean, the biggest one for me is just sometimes it's just random times of the day. All of a sudden we'll be talking about something totally unrelated to running. Could be talking about dinner, could be talking about food, could be talking about anything, and then all of a sudden I'll get a training question, and it just, sometimes I'm just shake my head that we don't always have to talk about running. And we don't always, it's just sometimes I think when you're planning your next day, you know, it just comes up. But, you know, the weirdest ones to me are when it's, you know, total out of the blue and we're just talking about something else and all of a sudden I get a question. And you know, you've had to learn to adapt to different training style as you've gone, you know, in the last 3 or 4 years into marathon training. We've had to do a lot more on, you know, changing the kind of the style. And you know, in marathon training, it's totally different than training for a 5K and 10K. The intensity and the focus is different. So It's kind of forced you to be able to adapt. And I think that's helped us survive as coach and athlete, that you've been able to adjust and kind of understand the importance of changing the emphasis.
Mm-hmm. And so then what is the most difficult part about coaching your wife or coaching me, as I can be a bit crazy?
It's just learning to, you know, when to pull you back, when to push you forward, because, you know, you're a very driven person, so sometimes I need to prod you with a stick and, you know, speed you up, but most of the time it's just slowing you down and telling you you don't need to go crazy. And, you know, it's just hard, because sometimes it's just hard to separate, you know, the husband side and the coach side, especially when, you know you got to push them, or, you know, you got to speak up and, you know, tell them to suck it up, or tell them to, you know, that it's going to be all right. Sometimes you got to find that balance. It's hard.
I think sometimes it actually, over the years, it's probably got a little bit better, because correct me if I'm wrong, but I almost feel like a few years ago you kind of, I was a little bit better at kind of, not want to say bullying you, but kind of persuading you to do what I wanted to do. But over the last like year or so, you've told me to do something, and if I say, well, but blah, 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 you say, no, we're sticking to this, and then I'll do it, obviously.
Well, it's more about picking your battles,
yeah.
And then, you know, like I said, I need your opinion, and that's the hardest part, is I need your opinion and need to be able to know what you're feeling and how you feel, and it's learning more of when to give and when not to. It's not necessarily a right or wrong. It's a give or take relationship. As far as a coach and an athlete, you have to get the feedback from the athlete. You have to know how they're feeling. You have to be able to adjust and make changes on the fly almost. And you know, that's the hardest thing is it's knowing, and that doesn't matter if I'm coaching you or, you know, coaching anybody, you have to learn where you can give and take, and you got to pick your battles with every athlete.
Mm-hmm. And do you ever feel like it's kind of a benefit that I am your wife, in that, like, you know, maybe if I was, if you were just my coach and I turned up to a training session and you said, how are you feeling? And I said, oh, I'm fine. But you know, because you're my husband, that I'd have a rough night, hadn't slept well, or something was bothering me. You kind of can almost like, you get that like insight that you might not elsewhere get. So do you think in some ways we get like a huge advantage from that, having the husband and wife and coach?
Yeah, I think some of it is a big advantage. Then, I know sometimes more of what's going on, but at the same time, it's, you know, again, like I said, you just kind of got to get on with it at certain points and not let that relationship affect the decisions you would make as a coach. So, you know, it helps you learn that person, learn kind of what they're, you know, if you say fine or somebody else says fine, it could be totally different actual meaning. Mm-hmm. So it's helped learn that thing, that side of it. But the other side of it is, you know, you've got to sometimes just view the athlete as the athlete.
Is there anything else about me that you think our listeners should know that, you know, maybe they don't see and that when I present? I know I share most things with the world, but is there anything that you would like to add as my husband having to deal with all that?
No, the biggest thing is what you put out there is the truth. I mean, you are as crazy as you sound. You know, the sugar is, you know, you eat that many sweets, you could eat an entire cake at once. It's not a lie. You know, the biggest thing is, you know, you're a very open book on what you show people online and through this podcast, but it's truthful. It's who you really are. And I know you from, you know, not just from those, where most people just know you from the podcast and your blog and everything you write. But what I'll say is it's truthful. It's who you really are. You're very open and honest, and it's not an act, it's not a front, it's just how you connect with people. So it's true. She's as crazy as she seems.
Oh, thanks. I think that's a compliment. All right, so something that, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, other than lots of requests for it, because apparently you're this mysterious man that everyone wants to know about, we have had, you know, people always asking about their own training, and, you know, I can't afford a coach right now. But I want to kind of make up my own training, but they don't really know either where to begin or, you know, why can't I just insert, I feel like doing a tempo tomorrow and then maybe in a few days I'll do a speed, you know, some 200s. Like, why can you not kind of just throw things together? Like, what is it about training for a goal race that you need to kind of structure it?
Well, some people that does work really good for us. Some people can just mix everything together, but those people are so rare that it didn't matter what kind of workout they would do. They would have gotten better and excelled it anyway. You know, the biggest thing is you've got to have, for my philosophy, is everything's got to be in a phase. Everything's got to follow a structure. You know, that probably comes a lot from my background in automotive and in engineering in general. Everything's more methodically laid out for me, which is sometimes it's a struggle for me to really, you know, be flexible enough to move things around and understand that not everyone's going to be, you know, the same, you know, work the same way with each thing. So, but for me, you can't just throw things in there. You got to have a plan. So if you're training for, you know, everything from a 5K or 10K, I mean, you're going to be a lot different training than a marathon. So the biggest thing is, you know, everything's got to be a phase. You got to have your base phase where you just kind of, you know, everybody knows that you're just kind of building your running up and your long run and kind of your volume is going up, but then you got to, you know, go into some strength and just generalization is getting your fitness there. And then it starts to get more specific. And that's where I think a lot of people lose it is, you know, they get too carried away with the latest craze in workouts or the latest, you know, the latest thing they read that so-and-so did that, you know, well, I can do that. Well, you don't know what they did the 6 weeks prior to that or the 6 weeks after that to lead up to doing this magical workout. And, you know, most athletes will tell you that it's not just one workout that makes them successful. It's months, years of consistency. So mm-hmm. it's that's the biggest thing is you're getting a snapshot of what these people do. And even if you look at a whole segment of a person, it's still not really, you know, exactly true on what they've done to lead up to that. So it's more about just understanding that each workout has to have a point. And as you progress through your season towards your goal race, your emphasis will switch. You know, early in the year, it's long runs and strength. And, you know, later in the segment, it might be more about speed. You know, and then later in the segment, it's going to be more about kind of getting sharp and race ready. And for a marathon or anything else, it's totally different. You know, the biggest thing is, you know, understanding that, you know, every workout you do has to follow and lead up to your grand plan at the end.
Okay. And then related to that, so if someone, you know, what would you say is the biggest mistake people make when it comes to, you know, is it that people throw speed in too quickly, do too many of those fast workouts thinking, I want to get fast, so I need to run fast? What would you say the biggest mistake most people tend to make if they're training themselves?
Probably do too much too soon. I don't know if that makes sense, but basically, so rather than just saying, all right, I'm going to stick to my plan and slowly build myself up, they're like, well, I want to run, you know, this time in the 10K, well, I'm going to just do everything I can. I got to get faster. And they kind of, their blinders around, they don't see what they're missing. So the biggest mistake I would say was just people do, you know, are going too hard all the time and not really letting the work take, you know, the workouts do their thing and help you progress that way. It's more that they just, you know, people are just so fired up to run hard, and people who are coached by themselves are usually very driven and very motivated. So it's not, you know, from, like I said earlier, it's they need the coach to hold them back mm-hmm. more than they need the coach to prod them.
Yep. Okay. And so you coach people all the way from 800 all the way up to myself in the marathon. So we do have some listeners who, you know, maybe you're going back to the track or back to the shorter stuff, you know, 800 mile, 5K. I guess maybe you could do 5K separately, but let's kind of talk about some key workouts that people can do in this specific phase, or maybe, you know, how they should kind of structure their training for, let's go through each of these groups to see what you think are some important points they should note. So, let's say 800 mile people first. What would you say to that?
Well, a generalization for everybody, whether you're an 800 person up to a marathoner, is building a base, is that long run. You know, some of the best 800 runners in the country still do long runs. You know, for them, it may
like
not
how
be.
How far?
It depends. I mean, anywhere from 12 to 16. You know, it just really depends on the person, but it's regardless of the distance of it, is it needs to be a long run for you. So a long run for somebody who only runs 4 or 5 miles a day regularly could be 8 to 10 miles is a long run to them. But it's, you know, if they're an 800 guy, I've had 800 guys that and girls that run, you know, just like a regular 5K, 10K person. They just do a little bit more specific. So for that person, they're used to running, you know, 10, 11 miles on a long run. So going up to 12 or 13 for them isn't really that big of a stretch. But obviously, you know, to go back to your question, it was an 800 mile. I think you need to live in that, I don't know, not to get scientific, but that anaerobic or that speed zone. So, you know, what I've always learned is, you know, you make your money as an 800 and a mile guy between 200 meters and 1,000 meters worth of repeats, you know, so that distance. So you just kind of have to live in that zone. Just you're just constantly, you know, firing on those workouts, really getting your legs moving, whereas somebody who's doing longer stuff doesn't really spend as much time there. So, you know, like I said, my philosophy is, like I said, I like to start off with longer repeats and, you know, build their strength that way. But then at the same time, your other workout of the week, you're not, you know, ignoring the fact that they're 800 a mile, they got to run fast. So you got to do more pure speed type work with them.
Mm-hmm. So it'd be two workouts a week plus the longer run. One of these is like a longer strength workout and one of them is like a short speed. So do you maybe want to give an example of each of workout that they would do maybe?
Okay, yeah. So that like the structure, what we follow for them, a lot of it depends on your race schedule too. You know, they'll do maybe a little bit longer run on Sunday. You know, like here, at, you know, we don't have a track. So we're only allowed access to the track a couple times a week. And whereas somebody who's, you know, out of college, that may be the same situation with them, is they may only have access to a track, you know, one or two nights a week. So you got to be flexible and understand that you can still train to run fast on a road or on grass or on a dirt path. But, you know, so what I would say is like your first workout, especially early in the season, needs to be kind of a little bit longer repeats. You can even start at mile repeats and work your way down, but I wouldn't go much more than that.
So how many would that be?
You're just trying to get, you know, each person is going to be a little bit different, but, you know, you're just trying to get, you know, so your race is a mile, so you don't want to be doing 6 miles a mile repeats. So, you know, anywhere from, you know, 2 to 3 miles worth of, you know, thousands, 800s, maybe even mile repeats. And then, you know, as the season progresses along, that first workout becomes shorter and faster, and then it becomes maybe some 600, you know, 2 miles of 600s, or, you know, I like just mix it up. And that's one of my philosophies too, is it doesn't matter the exact specifics of the workout. That's not where you're making progress, is it's doing the right type of workout. So there's no one magic workout. But I would say, like I said, I love having my milers do quarters, do 400s. And that just seems to be the one that, you know, seems to work best for them. And I think some of it's mental. They know in their mind, if I can run these 8 to 12 400s at this pace, I can go out and try, and, you know, and then it just kind of correlates closer to them as far as what they're trying to do in the mile. And then the second workout, like early in the season, we love doing big blocks of 200s. Not very fast, but it's just kind of short recovery, just continue to kind of slowly build that speed. And then, you know, the other thing is, later in the year, you know, you really got to start developing that sprint speed as a mid-distance person. So one of the things I think people neglect also is on your recovery days, you know, we'll sometimes mix in some real short, you know, 30 to 50 meter sprinting. That's just, like I said, that's just that explosiveness that you have to have for that type of kid. And again, that's something that we don't even do on a track. You know, we'll just do that on a grass field just because that's what we have access to. So that's those type of things that people can do. If you want to still race the 100 in the mile, especially, you know, you can do that kind of stuff without being on a track.
Okay, great. Very helpful. And so I guess maybe we can start with this and then move into the 5K. You mentioned about sprints, and what are your thoughts on strides? I mean, I know that you make me do, you know, strides even as in marathon training, but do you think how often should people do them and why are they so beneficial?
Well, Meg said it. Everybody calls it different things, a build-up, a strider, a stride-out. You know, we called them in high school, we called them 120s. We just knew that's what we were going to do. But the biggest thing is they're a warm-up tool and like a post-workout tool. They're really good at kind of just, I think they just make you feel better. So there's that aspect of it. But then the other one, I think it really helps develop kind of some quickness and some turnover without having to really dedicate a full segment or a full session to, you know, for somebody who's a 5K, 10K, or even like you as a marathoner, you just want to, kind of get your legs moving a little bit just so they kind of know what that feels like and the muscle memory stays there. But you know, I like doing them every workout. So that's, you know, at least twice a week there, and then maybe doing them two or three more times a week. I think doing them every day is kind of overkill. You know, so some days you just want to just do the run and recover and not be worried about trying to fire your legs up at the end. And we do them all different variations. You know, early in the year, we just do them as strides where they're just kind of a little bit longer and progress out. And as you do more, you'll get, you know, maybe the first two are nice and easy, and the next two you're going a little bit faster. And then, you know, by the end, you're doing five or six of them, and your last two are pretty hard, maybe 80%. But then later in the season, we'll shorten them up, and we start calling those build-ups, where they're a lot shorter, but you're building up to almost a sprint, but you're not holding it as long. So I think for those, when you get into build-ups, it's more about efficiency and really turning your legs over and keeping yourself sharp.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very helpful. All right, so I don't know if you want to do it as 5K training and then 10K training, or if you want to kind of lump them together. As far as I know, there's not too much difference. So maybe, you know, some key workouts, how someone should build up their training for a goal 5K or 10K.
I mean, just do 5K and 10K as one kind of general group is kind of the safest. I mean, you can be more specific if you're going to run mostly 5Ks. Obviously, you're going to be running a lot faster than 10K. And, you know, what I like to do is kind of keep people in groups so they at least have people to train with. So, our 10Kers might do a similar workout most of the time, and maybe just do a little bit more, you know, a little bit slower pace, a little bit more reps. The 5Kers and maybe do a little bit less reps, but a little bit faster. And obviously there's going to be days where you even need to split off and just decide, all right, is my goal race at the end of this, you know, if you're doing road races at the end of this year, am I doing a 10K in my local town that I want to, you know, I'd run every year that I want to run faster, or am I doing a 5K? Because then it'll get more specific. But I think, like I said, with 10K especially, is you got to get your body used for 6 miles. You know, and I think that's the key, is if you're having trouble doing 6 miles worth of quality work, whether it's, it doesn't all have to be at 10K pace, especially if you're just new to the distance, but you've got to at least get your body used to running hard for 10K. So it's building your volume up. And it's the same philosophy for me, is, you know, you got to have one workout a week that's, you know, faster, you know, maybe a little bit longer intervals this time. So 1,000 up to 2K. Worth of intervals, and you also have to have that faster day. So, but I think the big key for the 5K and the 10K, especially the 10K, is you got to keep the tempo runs and the longer work in there a lot more than you would with a mid-distance person. You know, they're doing a long run that's not necessarily as long as somebody who's doing a 5K or 10K. You know, I mean, our 5K, 10K guys are doing, you know, still doing, you know, 16, 18 plus long runs, but that's a little bit different, you know, because they're a college kid. They kind of can get away with that sometimes. Whereas if you're a guy who's going to road race a lot on the weekends, you may not have an opportunity to do as many, you know, long runs as they would. But, you know, the biggest philosophy for me in 5K, 10K is you've got to keep the strength up. So your volume's got to stay high. But like I said, I love doing ladder workouts. So you'll do sets of mile, 1,000, 800, or, you know, even down to doing 1,200, 800, 400. So it's just simple. You just keep doing one lap less every time, but just doing sets of that until you get your volume up to the point where you're doing it. And like I said, the biggest thing too is don't just rush to get to 6 miles worth of volume on your workout days, you know, and you don't have to all of a sudden be there the first month of your 10K segment. So it's, like I said, it's just doing a little bit of everything, if that makes sense. You got to have the long run in there. You got to still do the interval type work of, you know, 800 up to 2K, and then you also have to have that faster day in there too. So the hardest thing for me is just, you know, understanding that you don't have to check every box, and you have to learn that, you know, what works for you may not work for everybody. So that's kind of the toughest with the 5K and the 10K, because you'll have 5K and 10K guys that just thrive on more speed-based workouts. So, you know, maybe you're somebody that really loves going, doing the faster stuff, and that helps you get fit. Or you're the type of person that loves doing the longer, kind of more strength-based. So each person's going to be different. It's fine which type works for you. Maybe you're the perfect blend where you get to do, you want, need to do a little bit of both.
Okay. Well, this actually leads in perfectly to, you know, people obviously were a bit curious about as to what we were doing with me this summer, as you had me doing like a speed segment, you know, 5K, 10K training. I did a lot of workouts on the track.
as I go into a marathon segment. So you said about each person having their own, you know, strengths and weaknesses. So I guess firstly, maybe if you could explain how someone could kind of know what their biggest thing is. I mean, for me, obviously, I knew I had the, when we would do long runs, even in when I was in college, I would be loving the long runs. So I kind of always knew I liked strength. But how does someone find what they're good at? Let's start with that.
It's probably just more the workout where you can kind of, you see that consistently you do, I don't want to say you overachieve, but you run better in a certain type of workout compared to, you know, where your ability or your race distance performance actually is. So for you, it was easy because your long runs are at such a higher level than everything else. You just were pretty apparent that you were more of a strength-based runner. But, you know, some people, they're just, you know, I could think of kids I've coached in the past that were just struggling to just get through every Sunday just because the long run was just, and it wasn't that they weren't motivated or weren't dedicated athletes. They were extremely dedicated. The long run just wore them out. So I knew that was a weakness for them, was that they didn't have the strength, you know, running strength yet to do that. So I couldn't just let them do fast stuff all the time, even though that was what was probably their kind of more wheelhouse. So somebody like that would be the opposite of you, where they're just trying to get through the long run. So that person obviously is a little bit more of a, you know, speed based or like going to excel more at faster stuff. So, I mean, that's kind of that's the hardest part of being a coach too, is learning which, you know, what's going to work for each person. And it's even hard especially if you're coaching yourself, because you know the workouts you like to do, and those might be the ones you're good mm-hmm. at, but the ones you don't like to do, maybe the ones you should be doing.
Yeah.
So that's hard. And that's where I think reaching out to people and getting help. And actually, that's what I think what Runners Connect does is amazing, because it gives people resources and, you know, gives them coaching and really gives them help that, you know, like I said, if you just let your body choose every day, you just do what you're good at every time, and you neglect so many other things.
Yeah. Very important, and thank you for mentioning Runners Connect. I will put some links in the show notes actually about Runners Connect and some of the other things you've kind of talked about, the principles like running, you know, what having a purpose for each workout and some other things. So I'll put that at runnersconnect.net/RC124. All right, so then we're back to with me. Why did I need to do a speed segment going into a marathon? Like, what's the purpose of getting fast when I'm going to just slow down and go into a marathon?
Well, the main purpose is, as a marathoner, you become someone who mostly just runs marathons all the time. And you're basically neglecting one big aspect of training to, you know, for us, it was, for you, it's just, we do so much longer work in the marathon segment that you lose that speed and your body loses that efficiency to run at that faster pace. So for me, it was, just makes sense. You seem to always bounce back better, you know, when we go on from, you know, into the marathon segment, having done something faster first. So it just seems to be for you. And I think it's anybody. I think you can't neglect the speed aspect of it and being efficient at a faster pace, because most of the marathon is just a grind. It's just that daily grind and that accumulative fatigue effect. And just you're constantly, it's hard to really go out and run, you know, at a very, very high speed consistently during marathon training. And I think most marathoners will tell you that some days you're just struggling to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in, we were doing like 5K, 10K stuff, like what we did, it was trained for it, didn't really race much, but we just trained a lot for it. So everything we were doing was so much faster than where we're going to train for the marathon that should help, you know, the theory is that it'll help you feel more efficient at a slower pace once we start. But at the same time, like I said, it was just more of a generalization that, okay, we've neglected, we haven't done a speed segment in X number of months, it's time to just do it, because it's slowly kind of creeping away. If you don't do it, you're going to lose it. So if you don't use it, you lose it kind of philosophy.
And how does that help? Like, how does, you know, someone listening right now thinking, well, why do I need to run fast? I'm just going to run, you know, my marathon pace in the race. So what's running fast going to help me?
That's just going to make you more efficient at your marathon pace. It's going to give you, you know, your muscles are going to be stronger. You're going to be, you know, being a little bit explosive isn't a bad thing. And that's kind of what I view, you know, doing the speed stuff is, and doing all the strength training and all that kind of stuff. Just because you're a marathoner doesn't mean you just want to run, you know, marathon pace all the time, you know, because there's way more benefits to just running other distances. And you think about it as, you know, any sport, like you don't just do the one thing all the time. You do other, you know, I view it as almost as like a drill to get ready for the marathon, you know, mm-hmm. just because you're a, you know, a marathoner doesn't mean all you should do is just run marathon pace every day.
Okay. So then someone listening who maybe has done, I don't know, 5 or 6 marathon training segments in a row, would you recommend this for them, or is this, you know, not going to work for everyone? Would you say everyone needs to kind of get back to doing some faster stuff?
In my opinion, yeah. I think it doesn't matter whether you're a 4-hour marathoner, a 3-hour marathoner, or somebody who's just trying to finish a marathon. I think doing a little bit of faster stuff, no, don't get carried away with it and go crazy, and then by the time you get into your marathon segment that you've worn yourself out. But I think doing that will just kind of help you get your body ready to handle the marathon, not the distance, but just to be able to be more efficient and be able to kind of feel comfortable in the beginning of your marathon segment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And before we began, when this goes live, well, I think I've been running a few days, but we decided after this speed segment to take a week off. Maybe you could just, you know, kind of go over your philosophy with time off, why it's important, you know, anyone thinking, well, why did you do a speed segment and then stop and take a break? Surely you just, you know, erased everything you did. Why is time off in between segments, you know, complete rest, very important?
I think it just gives your body time to fully recover. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you took a week off, your body still got to that training level and got all that speed. And yeah, it's not, maybe not be quite as there, but it's, you know, your body's going to come back to that a lot faster having just been there. So the biggest thing is it just helps, you know, progress through. And like I said, I think for us, it was just made sense. You know, mm-hmm. It's just how it's always been, worked well for you, and you just feel efficient coming into it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think everyone should, you know, all runners, regardless of level or what distance, should at some point, maybe a few times a year, take a week off? Or are some people just okay to, you know, take a few days of cross training and then get straight back to it?
Yeah, I think if you're training at a high level for you, it doesn't matter if you're running 100 miles a week or 40. You still need to, if your body is fatiguing running 40 miles a week, just because you only run 40 miles a week or 25 miles a week, you still need to take a break. Just let your body recover. And, you know, as runners, everyone runs through little, you know, nagging injuries and just little things. You're never really going to get your body back to zero if you don't take at least a week or so off. And like I said, I think each person's different, and I keep saying that, but at the same time, you know, just because, oh, I'm a low volume runner, I don't need to take time off. Well, that's not necessarily true, because you're still tiring your body out. And maybe you could be a high volume runner if you actually would take a break and let your body build up naturally. So I think everybody should take at least a little bit of time off, give yourself a break and kind of get away from it and let your body heal. And, you know, that's a break. That's not, I'm just going to go swim in the pool for 5 days. Well, you didn't really ever give your body time to, you know, heal itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just one more thing before I want to ask you about marathon training and the workouts people should consider for that. You know, I always say, you say I'm very honest and open and that is the real me. But, you know, I kind of wanted you to just, you know, tell everyone that when I do take a week off, I do take a week off. I don't cross train. I don't, you know, go, like you said, swimming or whatever. Like, you know, it is important to have that rest. And I guess kind of just tell everyone that I do. This is another thing I actually do follow through with.
Yeah, most of the time.
And eat lots of sugar.
Yeah. No, I think most of the time, I mean, for you, you just know the benefits of it. So it's good. And I think it's hard for people to really grasp that somebody who runs at high level, well, they just took a week off. Well, yeah, everybody does. But no, except for generally you do it very well. Sometimes you get a little antsy and
mm-hmm.
start, you know, chomping at the bit. But that's a competitive person. That's just how it's going to be. But yeah, I mean, generally you like your time off, not just because you don't want to run, because you know you need it.
Yep, definitely. Okay, so then finally, let's finish with marathon training, maybe a few key workouts, a few key things. Maybe you could explain the progression run, which is kind of, you know, our favorite thing to do, but maybe just some key things marathoners need to keep in mind.
Well, I think the biggest thing is you got to have different types of workouts, even in a marathon. Just like when you're a 800 or a mile person, you're having different areas of emphasis for each workout. So it's the same thing with a marathon. So, you know, I break it up into three kind of categories. So you have your long run, you have your long sustained kind of, we'll call them tempo or just long efforts. And then you also have to do faster stuff, which, you know, that's the thing that people don't understand. It's just because you're a marathoner, why don't you just do long runs and tempo runs all the time? Well, no, you still got to do some of that faster stuff. So I think there's three different types of long runs too. There's the long, slow, just time on your feet. And that's one that, you know, for you that we neglected for a long time just because you wouldn't slow down. So, I mean, just time on your feet, it's just getting, you know, getting your body used to the pounding. So it doesn't, it's not fast. It's just being out there. And sometimes those are the hardest for people to grasp because it's boring.
Well, and I think we also found that I kind of struggled with, that was the one that actually ended up beating me up the most. So it was very important, you know, to get that in because it helped with race day of, you know, having spent that time just out there.
And then the other two styles are, you know, a progressive one, like we said, where you kind of say you're doing 20, you do 10 nice and easy, and then on the last 10, you're slowly progressing down to marathon pace. And people do that different ways where they might, you know, break it up, right? I'm just going to do 10 miles or 20 miles, but I'm going to have five of it within 5 seconds of marathon pace. And then I'll have 5 miles, you know, approaching marathon pace. So some people structure it a little more. Some people structure it a little less. For us, it just works better to have it structured a little less. And then the third type of long run is one, you know, we don't necessarily do very often, but you do just different, like kind of shorter repeats in the long run. So it's the same, a similar philosophy. So like with the long run with time on your feet, you're trying to get your body used to the pounding. With the progressive, you're trying to get your body used to running faster as it gets tired, or at least maintaining as it gets tired. And then the kind of with repeats in the middle of the long run, you're trying to get your body to kind of change gears and like be able to kind of race when it's tired a little bit. So for us, like I said, we focus on mostly on the first two. A lot of that's just because of what we have available to us to train. So that's kind of the big three for the long run. And then for workouts, I like doing long sustained stuff. You know, long sustained tempo efforts. And then, you know, also you want to break it up. So say you know, a real famous one people like to do is 3x3 miles, which, you know, we do that from time to time too. It's, you know, again, my philosophy holds all the way through from the 800 all the way up is it's not about a certain type of workout. It's getting the right emphasis and getting the right, you know, out of the workout, necessarily exactly what you did. And, you know, for us, like I said, I love doing the long runs. I think are the backbone of any marathon program, and also doing those long repeats too. And then, you know, the third type of workout is, you know, doing faster stuff. So, you know, get down to the 800 mile type repeat stuff a little bit during marathon training, just so your body stays efficient at that faster pace. So, like I said, and the big things for me are, you know, do different types of long runs. Don't just do the same thing every long run. You know, mix it up a little bit. And then also with your workouts, don't just do long sustained tempo runs. You can break your tempo runs up a little bit too. Say you want to do, you have 8 miles on your tempo. Well, break it up a little bit. Do, you know, 4 miles, 3 miles, 1 mile, or whatever you want to do. I like always having at least one longer block segment. If I'm going to do a broken tempo, I want at least a good portion of it.
With a little rest rather than just changing speeds.
Yeah. So it's similar, just like if you're going to do 3x3 miles, you know, you're going to do 3 miles, take 2-3 minutes rest, do another 3 miles. And each 3 miles, you want to try and progress faster. You know, the philosophy is kind of the same if you're doing a broken tempo. So say you're going to do, 10 miles, that's easiest. So you'll do 5 miles at, we'll say, roughly marathon pace. And then you'll maybe take a 2-3 minute break. And then you'll do 2 miles that try and go a little bit faster than marathon pace. And then maybe 2 more miles that, you know, so you're just kind of progressing it down. But then you start breaking it up towards the end so you can get a little bit faster at the end. So it's, you know, the biggest thing with the marathon is it's, you got to try and find all this, like you're just trying to mix everything together and you're trying to make the right mixture for that person. And, you know, the big thing I see is people just do the one type of long run all the time. They always run all their long runs harder. They always run all their long runs slow. And then they don't vary the workout enough. I mean, for us, it's different for what's worked for you is, you know, we don't necessarily do 2 workouts a week. We do a long run and then one workout a week, and it's just about volume. But for some people, you know, they're marathoners and they have to do those, you know, 2 workouts a week, or, you know, some people can structure their weeks different.
Okay. Yep. And just one other thing before we kind of wrap up and I get the final things I want to say. You mentioned other long runs, and then do you want to maybe say that you've made some changes in the last year or so with not necessarily doing a long run every week, like having a break from long runs from time to time?
Yeah, I actually, you know, talked to some other people and really tried to get some advice on people that have had successful careers as marathoners. And yeah, you know, the biggest thing is it's, you know, we've learned that we have to, you know, the big key is to a marathon is to get to the line. So in order to make sure that you're training smartly is, you know, you don't always have to do a long run every Sunday. You know, I even do it with the kids I coach in college is we have down weeks where you back off from the long run, and the same philosophy follows through in the marathon is you're going to have those, you know, whether you're running, you know, 7 minute pace to 9 minute pace on your long run, the time is the key. You got to give your body 1 week where it can kind of have a lot less time to actually do that run. So, you know, say you're doing 18 to 20 miles, it's going to be your longest run of your marathon segment. You should have at least 1 or 2 weeks in there. You shouldn't have 6 weeks in a row of 18 to 20 miles. You should break that up and have at least 1 week in there where you give yourself a, you know, a nice down week. So maybe your long run's only 12 to 14 or something.
And what else during that down week? Would you just reduce the long run, or would you reduce other things as well?
Now, reduce the volume a little bit, but you kind of got to keep the intensity in. So what you don't want to do is just reduce the long run, reduce the workout volume, and then, you know, maybe do one, you know. So it's, you got to do a little bit of everything. So for me, it's you back everything down as far as the long run and your weekly volume, but your intensities on your workout days and your workout distance still stays the same.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so one thing I think has kind of come across is from Steve, if you couldn't get it already, is that, you know, having that coach, having that outside opinion is, you know, key here if you really, really want to go for something special. And, you know, it's difficult to do that all yourself. And there are so many aspects that go into it. You know, people think running is simple, but there are so many things that go into it if you want to get the most out of it. So I will put links in the show notes to some information about coaching and, you know, Runners Connect specifically. We did mention that. Steve said he's a fan of that. But what about anyone listening right now who's saying, hey, can I be coached by you? What are your thoughts? Do you have time for that right now? I know the answer, but for anyone listening.
Right now, no. As currently, I'm not doing anything. I mean, I've helped a few people out that were friends of Tina's or just, you know, some of my athletes that wanted to keep going after college for a little bit. And like I said, I don't mind doing that stuff. But for me to really give the time to somebody, I just don't have it right now. Until I kind of get things more organized here, and I've started my master's. So, it's, you know, I didn't do the traditional route to get into college coaching and have my master's already. I'm trying to work on it now. So until I kind of get that done, I'm going to just focus on the college athletes. And, you know, and like I said, I'm more than happy to give people advice, but I just don't have the time to really, you know, do any coaching mm-hmm. besides my athletes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I will say, I've given you guys my emails quite a few times, but if you email me tina@runnersconnect.net, I will pass your message on if you do have any questions for Steve, so he can help you out. And I will say that he's not lying when he says he's busy. I mean, most days right now he's leaving the house at 5:15 and gets back, I don't know, it depends, between like 3 and, I don't know, sometimes as late as like 7. And, you know, still got a master's on top of that. And this is working 6 to 7 days a week. So he definitely doesn't have the time right now. But so then what about the future? Do you see yourself staying in college, or would you like to work with more post-collegiate? Any thoughts on where you'd like to go eventually?
I'd like to eventually, I think, work with more post-collegiate athletes. But, you know, currently I want to see how far I can get it with the college aspect of it. And the college is hard because as you get further along, it becomes more and more about the performance and less a lot about the athlete. It's more about, you know, the coach is expected to produce, and, you know, the athletes are viewed as a number and not really as a person. And that's not, you know, saying it's wrong. That's just that it's a business at mm-hmm. some point. And I don't ever want to get to that situation. And I don't think many coaches do. I think sometimes you just end up in that situation without realizing it. And it's not that that's, you know, a bad thing. It's just, you know, some of the coaches in those situations are kind of forced to, you know, in order to keep their job, they have to perform. So I don't want to ever be in a situation where I can't do what's right for the kid and not be worried about what's going to happen to me. So right now I'm going to stay in college coaching. I'd love to someday eventually get into more post-collegiate, but it's very, very difficult to get started.
Mm-hmm. And so speaking of that, you know, people often think, oh, I just want to set up a post-collegiate training group. You know, there's a few of them. There's Hanson Brooks, there's T-Work, Team USA Minnesota. I don't know, now Dennis Barker has left, if they're still going, but there's a few other ones, you know, Mammoth and things like that. And what is it about setting one of those groups up that it makes it kind of tough?
Oh, part of it is just finding the right area. Like every one of those groups you said have found great areas to train. I'm sure there are all over the country those areas, but there's so much more to it than just, you know, being able to coach these athletes, because it's having the facilities for them as far as, you know, the medical side of it. I mean, not all of them are going to be able to make a living doing it. So are you going to be in a big enough area where they can get a part-time job, and the people that are going to hire them are going to kind of understand that they're a little bit different. You're not your typical part-time worker. And, you know, it's just hard to really secure the funding and really get it off the ground without, you know, it just costs. It's the initial startup income, just like any business. I'm sure it's just initial startup costs are just so high. And, you know, it's just really, like I said, it's a lot of it's just kind of, it's hard to get it going. And, you know, USATF does some things, but at the same time, the biggest thing, it's just hard because you got to convince the kids, athletes to come, and that this is the right situation for them. And, you know, it's also just hard because you got to find the right area,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, not only the right area, but then it's got to be affordable and people got to be able to willing to relocate to there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. All right. Just wanted to get that quickly. All right. We just have a word from our sponsors and then we will be right to the final kick.
For years, we were told we needed to be hydrated, drinking gallons of water before we ran. And not only did that mean needing to pee every 2 minutes, but it was incredibly dangerous for our health, as runners suffered from hyponatremia. In step the sugary, bright coloured syrups to save the day, right? Well, wrong, actually. Not only were they pumping us full of unnecessary sugar and calories we didn't want or need, but they are full of artificial ingredients. Blech. I've been using EnduroPacks for years now, and I can honestly say this is the perfect solution to this problem. Just spray EnduroPacks electrolytes into any drink and be on your way. It's flavorless, other than a slight lemony taste, of course. It has zero calories, no sugar, no artificial ingredients, and will replenish your electrolytes in a matter of seconds. I love EnduroPack spray so much that during my marathons, I carry a bottle in my shorts and spray it directly into my mouth during the race. Visit EnduroPacks.com for more information and use coupon code TINAMUA for 10% off.
Okay, so we are back now and just have 5 more questions I asked to everyone. So I want to start with the greatest advice you've ever received. I'm really curious for this one. I have no idea what you're going to say.
I'd say this isn't coaching advice, just running advice. And that was from one of the guys I used to train with. He was a professional runner for Hanson's for a while. And his advice was take your easy days easy and your hard days hard. Because I think that's the most overlooked aspect of running, is everything becomes a moderate day and you never really have an easy day.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, everyone knows I'm a preacher of that too. Who was that, by the way?
It was Josh Eberle.
Okay, Josh Eberle. All right. If you're listening, I doubt he listens, but anyway. All right. Favorite running book or blog, other than my website?
Oh, it's got to be your blog. not really sure. Like I said, I've read so many running books, and I mean, I like the typical ones. Everybody loves the Daniels Formula book. Everybody loves the Run to the Top by Lydiard and. Run at it, whatever it is. But like I said, it was silly, but it was a book of just about like running quotes. And I just really liked it. I can't think of the name of it off the top of my head, but it's basically just a book of silly running quotes. And I liked it because it kind of showed the funny side of running. And it's not just all about seriousness. So
mm-hmm.
I said, I'd have to pick a couple. I like the Lydiard book, the Run to the Top, I think it is. And then I also love the Daniels books just because there's so much information in there, and you know that you got to learn how to use it. But and then I love that it's a book about just quotes of running. And I said, I'll get you the name. You can put it up there.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes. Do you remember what your favorite quote from that was?
I think it's by Don Cardon. Without ice cream, there would be darkness and chaos, or something like that.
That's very true. That's one thing you guys should know. Steve and I are big ice cream fans. We have ice cream rather a lot, probably a bit too much, but. We're going to try and knuckle down soon, aren't we? All right. What would you like to tell a brand new runner?
Start out slow.
Mm-hmm.
And get a good pair of shoes. You know, that's, you see so many people running in just the latest fad, or, you know, just
basketball high tops.
Yeah, or just running in shoes that aren't even designed to be run with. So, no, I would say start out slow and, you know, be smart and go to the running club, find a local running group. The running stores are great, and use those communities.
Okay, good. Very helpful. What is your pre-race meal or pre-run meal?
Don't really race anymore. But
okay, what was it then?
I used to like just having a bagel with peanut butter and a banana.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would have plain cereal because the milk was not a good idea.
What cereal?
Whatever was at the hotel we were at when I was in college.
What if it was Bran Flakes?
Couldn't do that.
Yeah, I didn't think so. All right, and finally, favorite running product. Oh, I think this may be your favorite thing you've been using recently.
Well, most recently is probably the Correct Toes, just to kind of try and fix some of the problems from all the years of running and orthotics and strengthen my feet back up. But I just like a basic watch. I don't think you need a GPS. I don't think you need any of the fancy heart rate stuff. The heart rate stuff is great, and so is the GPS. But the $3 watch from, $3 stopwatch from local stores, that's my favorite one because that's just as basic as it needs to be.
I think everyone just walked out of the room who's listening right now. How can you possibly not want your GPS and heart rate and everything? I know you guys are big data people, so maybe a shopper, but as you can tell, he knows his stuff, so maybe worth a listen. All right, Steve, so I'm going to end this right now and tell you to leave my office so I can finish off this podcast, but no, not really. We're probably just going to sit in here and talk a bit more, but sorry, I'm going to cut it off. So thank you for coming on, and thank you for explaining, kind of your philosophies on things. It's been really interesting, and I've actually learned quite a lot even just sitting here. So thanks, and hope you enjoyed it too, somewhat.
No problem. Thanks. Hopefully people get something out of it and enjoyed it.
Isn't he the best? Okay, so I might be a little bit biased, but I hope you will see that he really does have this amazing innate ability to understand training, and hopefully you took a lot from this one. I hope you got a lot of value, and I'd really appreciate if you did, if you could share this or any other episode you enjoy with your friends and family. The more people you get to share an episode with, the more people listen, and that means I can bring on more guests and maybe even make it 2 episodes a week like I talked about. And by the way, let me know what you think about that. I'd love to hear from you. If you have a local running club or a group you're a part of, posting it on their wall or sharing with them helps me so much. So thank you ahead of time for that. Oh, and if I lost you with our sponsors today, there will be links in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC124. But I thought I should spell out the websites just in case you missed it during the episode. So Endurapex is the electrolyte spray I love to use in my training, and that's spelled ENDUROPACKS.com. So remember, if you have a topic or guest you'd like to talk to me about, or would like me to interview them, I should say, you can email me, tina@runnersconnect.net, with your suggestions or your feedback if you have something you'd like to discuss. I look forward to hearing from you about that. So next week, we're going to be talking to Pete McGill, author of Born Again Runner, and he has so much great advice for you. You do not want to miss this one. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you have a great week.